How did you meet Gail?
Well, strangely enough, Gail, I tell everybody, she came looking for me. The treasurer of my church was a woman named Ms. Mabel. She was a very active woman in Eastern Star, the women's part of Masonic Lodge. And Gail's mother was very active in Eastern Star. They were members of another Methodist church about 6 miles away. And Ms. Mabel told Gail's mother, "We have a really good-looking young preacher. You should have your daughter come over to church and take a look at him." Gail was in college, and when she came home for Thanksgiving, her mother told her about me, you know, said, "Ms. Mabel would be thrilled if we were to show up over there." I knew nothing of this, and that first Sunday morning that I rushed from the smaller church to preach at the bigger one, walked into the pulpit, there she was, sitting near the back with her mother. I thought she was the prettiest young woman I'd ever seen in my life, so I was determined to get to know her better. She was just in on college weekends and stuff. We dated for a year and a half once I got to meet her, and she kept saying, "I cannot be serious with you." I said, "Why not?" "Because you're a theology student." I said, "I met you in church." She said, "Oh, I believe in God, but I'm not going to be a preacher's wife." I asked, "Why not?" "Well, I don't sing well. I don't play the piano. I don't play the organ. I'd be mortified if somebody asked me to pray in public." And I said, "What if I were to promise you you'd never have to do any of that?" She said, "Really? And what would I do?" I said, "Could you sit on the front row and root for me?" I remember, and she remembers it too, and she said, "Sure." I said, "Then why don't we keep going, see how this works out?" A year and a half later, we were married, and in all of my churches, I've said to people, now, Gail didn't feel called to be a minister. Gail wanted to be my wife. So she doesn't want to be president of United Methodist Women, and she's not going to sing in the choir. I'll make the speeches, and Gail will be there every Sunday and root for me. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but Gail sits on the front row and roots for me every Sunday. As our children grew up, they sat on the front row and rooted for me, too, right with their mom.
Your children, let's name them.
Our oldest son is named Marvin Muzon Biggs III, but we started calling him Trey when he was born, and he still prefers to be called Trey. He lives right here in Tulsa. He's president of CFR Insurance, graduated from SMU with a degree in economics, married a Tulsa young woman he had met in high school, and she went to University of Oklahoma and was graduated. They got married after both had finished college. They have 3 children. Our youngest son is named Jason Paul Biggs. He was graduated from SMU with a degree in mathematics and pre-med, came back to Oklahoma and went to the University of Oklahoma Medical School, met his wife-to-be in medical school. When they were graduated, they both ended up doing residencies at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, the University of Texas program there. 5 years, came back to Tulsa. Janet is a nephrologist at St. John's Hospital, and our son Jason is an anesthesiologist here in town, and they have 3 little girls. So we have 2 sons, 2 daughters-in-law, 6 little grandchildren, all involved at Boston Avenue Church. So that's about as good as it gets for us. We did have a daughter also. When Gail and I had been married 6 years and had no children, we were having trouble getting pregnant. We were told that maybe adoption would be the best way to go. And we adopted. Our first child was a daughter named Allison. She was born at the Methodist Mission Home in San Antonio, Texas. Had a lot of problems by the time she was 12. Was slipping around at friends' houses and having a little alcohol. Later we found out a little marijuana. Later became cocaine. Later became crack cocaine. She died at 31. She was out in California. Had been married and divorced twice, had no children, out in the Oakland, California area one night, got a mix of alcohol and drugs that stopped her heart. She died shortly before her 32nd birthday. But the 2 sons survive, and they're here in Tulsa, and wonderful. Never made any of those mistakes our daughter did, never.
And that's a whole nother topic.
It is.
She was probably born with that gene, you believe?
Yes, I do now. Just to tell you briefly, there was a professor at University of Texas who resolved that he was going to spend his adult lifetime studying the old question of nature-nurture. He entered into an agreement with our Methodist Mission Home in San Antonio. that he would be told names of couples who had adopted children, and if they chose to participate in his interviews, they could. We agreed to do that. We met him shortly after our Allison was born. As she grew a little bit more, he gave her eye-to-hand coordination tests, all kinds of things. He interviewed Gail and me on different occasions. Then after she was maybe 5 or 6, we didn't hear any more from him. A few years ago, he suddenly called me out of the blue one day. I didn't even remember his name at that point. He told me who he was, that he was in his mid-60s. He was about to finish his life's work and wondered if he could interview our Allison. I told him she had died at 31. Oh, no, what happened? So we told him, and he said, I must fly to Tulsa and talk to you. Would you and Gail be willing to talk to me a couple of hours? We said, sure. Well, he talked to us for about 4 hours, asking questions. And finally he said, I want to tell you something that you're not going to want to hear as a minister, because I know you think anybody can be changed. But after studying this for more than 40 years, I'm convinced that some people are born not wired right. Sociopaths who have no sense of right and wrong, of people they're hurting and they don't care, they don't have a sense of delayed gratification at all. I believe some people are not wired right. Our daughter was born in 1965. That was in the height of one of the drug epidemics in this country, the anti-Vietnam War protests and so on. The home in San Antonio was very secretive back in those days. They promised young pregnant women, if you will have your baby here and place it for adoption instead of abortion or something else, we will see to it that this child does not suddenly appear on your doorstep when he or she's 20 and you're remarried and have started your life over. They also said to adoptive parents, if you adopt through this agency, when you've come to love this child more than your own life, you will not have a mother or father reclaiming the child. So it was all very secretive. So we don't know the background that Allison had, but this professor thinks she could have had fetal alcohol syndrome or could have been drug addicted even before she was born. Not sure, but she never really bonded with anybody. There were a lot of problems. From the time she could talk, almost a habitual liar, unlike any person I'd ever known in my life. I'd never known anybody like her in my life. Gail and I agonized over her for many, many years and never were able to help her make the turn. Again, she was given every opportunity that our two sons were later as they came along, but they responded wonderfully well and she did not.
So your life in the church, did she reject the church flat out from the beginning?
No. I mean, it was a rule at our house. In the same way you don't get to vote on going to public school, you don't get to vote on going to church either. When you're an adult, you can reject anything you like. So she was baptized as an infant and grew up in the Sunday school and church, was confirmed, sang in our choirs here at the church and all. It was another life out there beyond the church. Yeah.
Must have made you, in your ministry, sympathetic to the families who were going through this, and in your counseling, it must have affected you.
We had a retired bishop here at that time, Bishop Paul Galloway, a wonderful man who had grown up in an era when preachers admitted no fault. You know, preachers didn't have problems, and if they did, they didn't talk about them. And when Allison was 16, she went out the window of our upstairs parsonage, down a tree, and disappeared. We were already having counseling with her, had been for several years at that point. The counseling was helping Gail and me, but it wasn't helping Allison. It was helping us understand a little better as we went along what she was doing and why she was doing it, but she was not being turned at all. The counselor told us, as you tighten more and more, she will either start to conform or she'll break and run. She broke and ran. We didn't know where she was and did not know for the next 2 years where she was. She had hitchhiked from here all the way to Colorado. It was a long, long story. It wasn't a boy thing for her. It was a drug thing. It was drugs, and we were not going to tolerate them in our house. Anyway, I talked with Bishop Galloway and poured out my heart, and I said, Bishop, I think this church needs to know what we're going through. because they might find her out there in a ditch somewhere tomorrow. We didn't know for sure that she wasn't still in Tulsa or close by. The counselor had told us, if your church people jump on you for not being out there looking for her, you send them to me and I will read them the story of the prodigal son. Sometimes fathers and mothers have to wait. And this is your time. You have to wait and see if she'll come home. And she didn't ever. We saw her more than 2 years later, and we would go see her with her permission. We would come and see her from time to time, but she never, ever lived at home again. She was not willing to change her life enough to be a part of our family.
So you'd see her in Tulsa or some other?
In Denver, and then finally she had moved on to California from there.